outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, get ready for the best morning show on the internet. It's time for Sam in the Morning with Brigetta, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Tuesday, February 14th.
Oh, the shitty Valentine's Day. Anti-Valentine right here.
Well, happy Valentine's Day to the ones who do celebrate it.
Yeah.
And not so much for people who don't like it.
No.
Yeah.
It's overrated.
It is overrated, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a holiday created by businesses, by corporations and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I mean, there is St. Valentine, but I mean, it was an excuse by the card company.
Yeah, it's just an excuse, like you said.
Yeah.
You know. So, how are you doing this morning?
Oh, I'm just dandy.
Wonderful. I'm glad to hear that.
I went out last night because I was all upset. I'm like, I hate Valentine's Day. And I was in a mood. And so I went out. Actually, it's funny. A girlfriend came over and she's like, oh, we're going to go running. And so we went running into a bar. And I walked right into happy hour. And I was there for a couple hours, actually a long time. And I called another friend. And then it was great. We had fun. Got my mind off things. Did a lot of shots. And then somehow I wound up in a strip club last night.
In a strip club?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you don't know how that happened or what?
Oh, it was my idea. Absolutely was my idea. Yeah.
So you guys were pretty drunk and everything.
I was drunk and I was like, let's go see some boobies.
Yeah. So you went.
Yes.
Where is it? In Hollywood or something?
No, it's in Glendale.
Glendale?
Yeah.
So it's not like it was on the way.
Well, I live in Los Feliz, right. So it was kind of on the way because I ran to like Glendale area to go and drink.
Right.
Don't ask. And so it was on the way back.
Yeah. So was that a topless bar or fully nude?
It was fully nude, but it was really funny because when I walked in, I was wearing like running gear too. Like I wasn't even dressed up and it was so funny. And the guys were like trying to be like, who are you? And I'm like, I'm Brigetta. Who are you? Like, I'm the owner. I'm like, oh, well, so nice. I'm just, like, trying to like get my way. I'm not going to pay. I'm not going to pay. Like, I'm a chick. I'm cute. I'm not going to pay. Who pays? So I like weaseled my way in, whatever. And then they like asked me to come to the limo. And I was like, what's in the limo? And they're like, there's booze. Because they don't serve booze on fully nude.
Exactly.
Right.
Yes.
So there's booze and there's a booze limo. And I was like, all right, I'll go in the booze limo. And my friends are like, don't go in the booze limo. I'm like, I got this. Like, I'm good. I'm going to go in the booze limo. Yes, absolutely, I am. And I went in the booze limo. And they were like trying to take pictures. I'm like, no pictures. I will not get in any of your pictures. Absolutely not. And it was pretty funny. They're like, why? And I'm like, no, I don't need that on the internet. That's all I can say now. That would be awesome. But yeah, so it was an interesting night. Yeah. It was weird. I mean, there were a lot of big chicks there. I don't get hats at all. No. But there were a lot of like, they're too cute.
What do you mean big? Like big bones or overweight?
I mean like overweight. Like,
really?
Girls got to lose like 60 pounds. Like dancing on the stage, nude, gross. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, not so hot.
Maybe some guys like that, but I can't imagine in a strip bar.
To each his own, I guess.
Yeah.
But I was like, damn. Yeah. Shamu just got in here. Oh my God. Like, so mean. I'm so mean right now. I'm being cursed somewhere. But yeah. And another thing is, like, you think if it's a big woman, you think they'll have big boobs. And they're like tiny boobs.
Really?
Yeah.
So they're totally out of proportion and everything.
Totally. I was like, that's weird.
Yeah.
At least have boobs.
Maybe it's a club especially for that.
No, you know, I mean, there were some tiny girls too. I was like, oh, okay, put those on stage.
Wow.
You know, cool, let's watch them. Yeah, I don't know.
That's interesting. Yeah. You got to salute those women who are willing to show their bodies off.
Yeah. I mean, hey, more power to you. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I'll do it in the bedroom with my guy or whoever, but I am not doing that.
No, but you also have a body that I would imagine, proud of, whereas I don't think they are.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Well,
so it takes a lot of balls to do that.
some girls are have really hot bodies there. But yeah, it's got to be a lot of balls to get up there. Because I don't think I could be up there spread eagle.
Right.
With like nothing
on.
I
know. That's like.
I could see everything like inside. I was like, whoa, I feel like we're at a gynecologist. Like,
yeah.
Damn. All right.
Just
you know.
Get the speculum.
All right. Yeah. So, I mean, whatever. I have fun. Yeah. I have fun. I appreciate, you know, hot chicks. So.
I'd only been twice to strip bars, and that was like a long time ago. Yeah, never got like a lap dance or anything.
Oh, those are fun.
I know, I heard.
Yeah, those are really fun.
But I would feel stupid doing that.
Why?
You know? I don't know. It's just like, you know, I'm not gonna pay this chick to dance around me. You know,
I mean, I want her dancing like, on me.
On me, exactly.
On me.
Same thing. I don't know, but yeah, maybe it's worth it. I don't know, but I just saw like a few of them on the stage and. And yeah, they did spread wide and
I'm like, well, that's crazy.
So now, why do you think they don't allow drinking in fully nude bars?
Well, you know, that's only here because I grew up in Baltimore area, but in D.C. you can drink in a fully nude bar. It's totally fine. Yeah. So I guess it's because people get drunk and out of control and they start touching and groping and it gets all.
Yeah,
you know.
But that can happen in a topless bar too. You know. Yeah.
Agreed. I don't know.
So it's crazy. I mean, all these people that make these laws, you know, out of
it's
their
just
minds.
Stupid. I know.
Out of their minds.
But anyway, that was my night.
Okay, cool.
I felt better.
A pre-Valentine's Day evening.
Yeah, damn it. I'm having my anti-Valentine's Day party tonight anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe there'll be some pickings. I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
So what's an anti-Valentine's Day party? What is that supposed to do?
I do it every year. I did it last year, and it was so fun. And I get these, like, big hearts, and I have everyone sign on them on one side. On the other side, I have them write something dirty or something of why you hate Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, why you hate Valentine's Day party? And it's fun. And, like, at the end of the night, I give a prize. And you go through them. I have them hanging out for, like, months. And there's, like, 100 people that showed up. And you go through them all, and you're like, oh, my God, who wrote that? And
really?
You go back, and you're like, whoa, crazy. Yeah, there's some really fun ones. They get really, like, funny and raunchy. But yeah, they're hilarious.
100 people at the party?
Yeah.
Wow.
I always do it up.
Really?
I have good parties.
Yeah.
I do.
It's a pretty big party. And can you fit everybody there?
Yeah, you've seen my place.
Yeah.
I have a huge place. I turned the back into a whole dance floor.
That's true.
Yeah, we get the lights going. I have two bars. Why not? It's a great party house.
The house equipped for parties.
It is. I got the house because of it.
Yeah.
I like entertaining.
Yeah.
I get bored.
That's
easily.
Good. That's good. I mean, you know, you're social and you like people and stuff, so that's cool.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes.
No, most of the time. I do like entertaining. Yeah. What are you doing tonight?
I don't know. I don't know yet. We'll see.
Wow, what a great husband.
Yeah, well, I can't tell the whole world what I'm going to do. You know, it's a surprise.
Oh, it's a surprise? Okay,
yeah,
okay.
So I'll tell you tomorrow.
Tell me tomorrow.
Yeah.
Fine. Let it be creative. All right. But yeah.
All right. Well, you know, Valentine's Day, whatever. You know, it affects everybody differently, I suppose.
I guess so.
And, you know, I mean, I'm usually anti-Valentine's Day, but just because of the restaurants charging a lot and you can't go anywhere without, like, you know, forking out $300-$500.
That's why I think it's so much more sexy when someone does something at home or the beach or like somewhere, you know, you don't need to spend money.
Right, yeah.
I think that's way more thoughtful. I'd rather have that than be taken out to some restaurant.
Yeah, got to be creative with that. Mm-hmm. No, absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, well, we have a special guest in the studio who Brigetta got a hold of.
Yes.
I didn't realize you guys hadn't met before.
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
My friend Jason is awesome and he has like all kinds of amazing people that he knows and he's like, oh, this would be a really great person as a guest. And I checked it out and I'm like, yeah, we got to have him in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead and introduce him to us then.
So we have Dr. Michael Lennox on the show and he is a dream expert per se and amongst many other things, but I'll let you go on and introduce yourself.
Welcome, Dr. Michael.
Yes.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I must say of the many, many times I've been a guest on a radio show, this pre-show has been very unique.
Really?
Good. Well, yeah, this show is different.
Yeah.
So it's at your anti-Valentine's Day party, there's drinking, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And is there going to be full nudity?
There might be. Yeah. I mean, that comes after
you
the
You never
drinking.
Know. Yeah, it's worth
With
it.
My party, you don't know.
It's one of the surprises.
Exactly.
Well,
oh my God.
Thank you for having me on. It's really, it's a great pleasure.
Thanks for
coming on. So you specialize in dreams.
Yes, yes.
Now, do you have to be a doctor to specialize in dreams?
Well, I certainly was not. I did not get my advanced degrees until I was well into my 30s, and I really was a self-proclaimed dream interpreter in my 20s, and it really started when I was a kid.
Really?
Wow. Oh, absolutely. I was just fascinated by dreams as a little boy, and I was, I think my fantasy life was really my protection, you know, from the early childhood dramas of being a human being.
Yeah.
And I
yeah.
just loved dreams. And then when I was a teenager, my mom went to grad school and got a master's in social work, and she had Freud's Interpretations of Dream on her shelf, and I was like, dreams, Freud, whoa, that's cool. And I read it. Now, I was 15, 16. I'm not sure what I understood of it, but I did get the one salient piece of information, which was that dreams could be looked at, and that value could be gotten from considering them or interpreting them.
Right.
You know, and then what happened was, dear, this is really, this is both dating me and outing me is probably gay because it was the Fiddler on the Roof cast album that really did it.
I love Fiddler on the Roof.
Well, I listened to that album about 1,000 times as a little gay boy in training. And Golda says to Tevye, tell me what you dreamed and I'll tell you what it meant. And I mean this. I, you may sound like I'm trying to be funny, but this is actually in my bio.
Oh, wow.
Because it was that phrase that came out of my mouth as a teenager after I read this book by Freud, and I was in social settings where kids would say, oh my God, I had the craziest dream last night, and I would remember Golda.
Right.
Wow. Tell me what you dreamed and I'll tell you what it meant.
Wow.
And what happened was I would just listen to the story that I was being told, and I don't know what I said. It was many, many years ago. But people would respond. They'd be like, wow, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Now, later I figured out what was happening. Dreams are stories. They're stories told in a language. The language is symbols. The symbols have meaning. I was just retelling the story as a function of what the symbols I heard felt like to me or seemed to indicate to me. And then, of course, as I got older and studied dreams and read more Jung and whatnot, I began to be able to incorporate theory into that process.
Right.
Okay.
Well, that's pretty interesting. So we'll go back to that. But originally, where were you born and raised?
I was born in upstate New York in the Catskill Mountains. And then grew up mostly in New Jersey, and my parents split up early, so I sort of split my time between the Catskills with my dad and Jersey with my mom, and then New York City before I came out here.
I see. And grew up in a Jewish family, I would imagine.
Well,
right?
Yes
with
and no.
Fiddler
there
on
was
the roof
we and... yeah right. It was a little of everything, but my mom chose to raise us as Jews when she was a single mother, just because I think she wanted a community around her. But there was Catholic and Protestant. I had a I even have some Pennsylvania Dutch.
Really?
Oh, wow.
I have a grandfather who was you know, like Shaker or Quaker. Or,
no way.
Yeah.
Shaker?
like those furniture-making Amish cousins.
Oh,
yeah.
You're so
but
funny.
I culturally identify with Judaism, not from a religious standpoint, but from, you know,
like culture
and heritage and the bigness and the warmth and the expressiveness of being
Mediterranean. So you grew up there and then... And then did you guys move from there?
Well, I came out to L.A. as a young man. I was about 25 years old, and it was really on a whim. I had a partner at the time who worked for a company that was relocating. We were like, we're not going. I was a tried and true New Yorker. We were living in Greenwich Village. I was working as an actor as a young kid, and I was... But then something just landed in our heads, and we never even discussed it. It just at the very same moment, we were like, let's go. That was 27 years ago.
Really?
Wow.
And I've never looked back. Now, I had the great fortune of having several childhood friends land in L.A. So when I got here, I already had, to use a nice Yiddish word, mishpucha out here. I had deep friends, family-like friends that I had known since I was a boy. So, and we're still hanging out together.
That's so great.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, we're all almost 50, and we hike every Saturday over at Fryman Canyon.
Really?
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that is so awesome.
Very cool. And I, on those hikes, you know, they will sometimes say, okay, Rabbi Michael, I need some guidance.
Rabbi Michael.
Absolutely, that's what they call me.
You.
I guess I'm more Jewish than I knew.
Duh, they call you rabbi.
But yeah, I do other things. My doctorate is in psychology, but I'm also an astrologer. And I call myself an ambassador to the unconscious mind. I'm interested in anything that reflects the invisible side of life because I really do believe that that's the much greater part of this existence that we are in.
Really? So you think it's a greater part?
Oh, I do. I would say by... by a ridiculous proportion. If I had to make up a number, I would probably say that we're about 96% invisible in terms of... Just think about the solar system.
Right.
We're these little specks of consciousness, and yet now we're aware of this great expanse of what we would call nothing, space. But that's now part of our consciousness, and it's the big invisible. There's sort of, we think of it as nothing there, but of course, it's part of who we are as an energy, as a frequency.
Right.
And so, yeah, I would say my little tiny consciousness is nothing compared to space,
yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah.
And certainly dreams, too. I mean, in the dream world, you can go anywhere.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about dreams. I mean, you were fascinated with them when you were young, and you picked up the Freud book and everything. So... What did you feel qualified you to be able to interpret dreams for other people?
You know, it was the response in people's eyes when I would say what I felt. Mm-hmm. It was that, because the recognition of an idea that might be true. It's not about being right, of course, but it is about having a resonance.
Right.
And I've had that experience thousands and thousands of times, so that's undeniable to me. You could have a panel of academicians in here saying, oh, well, you're not qualified, or you're not this, or you're not that, and I'd be like, yeah, but you can't take away from me the thousands of times that someone has widened their eyes and gone, oh my God, that makes so much sense. So I began to trust the gift of hearing a story told in the language of symbols and then retelling the story in the interpretation of those symbols.
So now, so you feel what we dream is symbols? You don't think it's based on, I don't know, I mean, obviously it's based on our lives, on our...
Yes.
On things that happen to us. Well, but how did you figure that it was a symbol?
Well, everything's a symbol.
Mm-hmm.
Our lives are all about symbols. Think about... What's happening right now, we've got three people who are just making sounds. That's all we're doing is making sounds. Mm-hmm. But every sound symbolizes a letter.
Mm-hmm.
And the you put them together and those groups of symbols symbolize a word.
Right.
And those words symbolize something that's not in the room.
Right. Mm-hmm. But these are things that man created. You know, I'm talking about dreams that are like, you know, the bigger picture.
Well, I believe that it's really all the same principle that the... invisible parts of the universe are energy. They're frequencies. Mm-hmm. They don't have any real tangible anything until man perceives them and interprets them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so it's really the same thing about the images that come up in our minds and our fantasies and our dreams.
Right.
So,
go ahead.
Well, I have a question too, because I feel like, okay, when I was younger, I used to dream of places before I went there all the time.
Yes.
And I was huge in that. And I haven't been doing it as much recently, but I always dream of a house before I move into it. And then I know when I find that house, that's it. That's what I'm moving into. And so it's like, okay, so are you psychic because you're dreaming dreaming of places before you go there, or is your subconscious, like, I guess it's like, it's a catch-22.
Well, I certainly understand the question, and what I would say is that we are all intuitive, psychic, whatever, there are different words to describe the perception of things that are beyond this sort of linear way in which time moves. There's just a bigger thing going on where there's a part of your consciousness that does know the house.
Okay.
I sometimes call it forward memory. We get it and trust it as backward memory. Mm-hmm. Oh, I've been there. I know that house. I was there at a, you know, a naked Valentine's Day, you know, anti-whatever party.
Right.
Whatever, you know. So I know that house. I believe that in the, you know, invisible parts of the universe, we also have this kind of a forward memory. You know, when I turned left onto the street that I moved into in Los Angeles as a 25-year-old young man, I knew that we'd been looking at apartments for 2 days. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I didn't dream it the way you did, but it's, I think, the same principle.
My
intuition knew that I was going to be looking at those palm trees in the way they lined up every day. It just felt, I was certain. Now, I couldn't explain why, really. I mean, I kind of sort of could now, but it would be just me being... you know, just exercising some, you know, intellectual blah, 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 blah. But I knew it. I trusted the impulse. So I think it's the same thing for what you're describing. And even what you describe as it diminishing as you get older is also typical, because when we're younger, we just edit ourselves less.
Yeah, you're right.
Because it's safer to be spontaneous and we don't question it as much. And then as we get, as you have illustrated a little bit today, we get a little wounded, we get a little hurt, we get a little this, we get a little, we hesitate in our impulse. impulses.
Right.
Right. So, so tell us, I mean, so those are symbols and everything. How do you find, like, what each symbol is?
There's a way, and this happens in my mind very fast, and it took me a little while to figure out that this is how it happens in my head, and I just happen to be gifted to be able to do this at lightning speed. Mm. Everything has a universal meaning associated with it based on what it is or what it does, what its purpose is, what its use is, or what its essence is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So like if, all right, so there's a cup over there and it's got some water in it, right? So the cup represents the containment, the ability to contain a small amount of precious life force giving water. So that if I dream about a cup, it's about my ability to contain something. If the cup breaks in the dream, then my ability to contain something that's precious and needed is compromised.
Right.
So you see, the meaning derives right from what the thing does. A refrigerator keeps an area of space cold in order to preserve something. So then symbolically, in a dream, refrigerator would be the need to preserve, the desire to preserve, or the ability to preserve something.
Yeah. Wow, that's pretty interesting. Yeah. So it's universal.
Yeah, absolutely. The way I think about it is if you got, you know, a million people in a room, to what would be the thing they would most agree upon? What would all people agree upon based on their sensibility of something? Like snakes is a good example I use all the time because they show up in dreams a lot.
I love snakes.
And one of the first things, and yeah, people either love snakes or they're terrified of snakes,
exactly.
Right? But that's a personal thing. What do we all get taught about snakes in grade school?
Sneaky.
Well, but what are we taught about something
that
happens?
Right? Oh, they bite you.
Ah, some do. They shed their skins.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like mine
they
doesn't bite.
They shed their skins.
Yeah, they do.
Some bite, some don't, but they all shed their skins, and that's a fascinating idea. What does that then represent? That represents that growth happens, but transformation is sudden.
Okay.
And I shed the old skin, and I'm already prepared to move forward in my new... So snakes represent change and transformation.
What about kids?
New possibilities.
Interesting.
Kids are the potential to grow up to adults.
Mm-hmm.
So you go further, the further back you go in age, the more pure potential we're talking about.
Yeah.
So a kid would be sort of a half-formed idea that can grow up to something substantial. A baby would be a pure potentiality of some new possibility, some new idea, some new choice, some new project, perhaps.
Yeah. What about your dream? You said you had a dream last night. Do you want to discuss it? Or?
I had two really weird dreams last night, but I know what they are, but then I don't. So that doesn't make any sense. Okay, one of them was, it was so weird. It was about this guy, and it was like, okay, I was with this guy in the dream, and then it's so weird. And so they just stopped talking, and then so I get this phone call. And the phone call is like, instead of coming from like him, it comes from someone else, which is weird. And the phone call is like, he's not talking to you because he's mad. This is so weird. He's mad because you talked about his religious, like whatever, like he's Mormon, which I don't know anyone Mormon. So
right,
I don't know where this came from. And because you said he was Mormon on something. And so he's all upset about that. And so he doesn't want to talk to you anymore. And so therefore just do not contact him. And I was like, what? Okay, this is so weird. What the hell? And I was really upset. So I'm in this bar, or in this, actually, I wasn't in a bar. It was like a cafeteria, which is really weird. I don't know where, like a ski lodge or somewhere.
Okay.
And he's there. And I'm like, no, I need to go up and talk to him. I need to be like, what the hell? All my friends are like, don't do it, don't do it. And I'm like, no, I need to confront right now. I need to know why. Uh-huh. Why are you doing this? Like, can't you talk to me? Why are you being such a wussy? Why can't you talk to me and tell me? Why does it got to be like other people? And I wound up going, trying to go up, but I could never get to him. So it was really weird. And so then that dream was done. And then I woke up like, oh my God, like I was so hurt and so messed up from it. And then and it was like I wasn't allowed to be anywhere near him. Like it was like he had people like around stopping it. And then the next dream was, it was just so weird. So the next dream was like in a house, and it was like a cozy little place. I guess it was his place. I've never been to this place, so I don't know what this is. And there was like a couch, and then there were like little kids, and then there were like, I guess his parents that were there, and they were like, and I was like playing with little kids, and they're like, oh, you're such a wonderful person, blah, blah, blah. And it was all like totally changing and totally like loving, cute, whatever. And then we went hiking, and then we were climbing down, where this place is, climbing down these rocks, and then climbing through these rocks, and then climbing up a hill. And then it was like, it was a good day. And so then I was like, that's so weird. It just totally conflict. Like, it was the same person in the dream.
Okay. This is great. Well, whenever we have dreams that come in, you know, groups, I always like to assume that there's an evolution going on, that that there's a reason why they happen in the particular order that they happen. So we're going to sort of, I'm going to start with the second dream where there's a kind of positive outcome. And you asked about kids earlier, right? And that's obviously why, right? Yeah. So if you think about that, this is about relationship issues for you, right? And that we always function in our relationships as adults based on our parents' relationships and our relationships with them, their relationship with each other. This little family unit, it's in a house. Houses represent our sense of self. And so this is the evolution of you looking at how you're experiencing relationship. You're looking at the potential of, you know, the young kids in the dream who think you're terrific would be the different way that you're working towards being in relationship.
Okay.
You understand? They're young. They're going to grow up. They're part of you. They're your thoughts about love.
Okay.
That love you unconditionally, that aren't sitting around thinking, why is love not working? All right. And then you connect with this partner piece of you, which is not him. It's not his dream. It's the part of you that's available for relationship. You have to do some trekking. You've got to climb some hills. That's like effort. You've got to hike around the boulders. Boulders represent the earth's memory and sort of old ideas about how to traverse over difficult land in this new relationship area. So the second dream is more like the healing that's in process. The first dream is representing the wounding that's in process. And you're talking about, again, I don't want to get too political about religion and whatnot, but when we're talking about religiosity, we're talking about sort of the ways in which people say they love, but they kind of hate.
Okay.
You know, and the you know, being a gay man, I have a particular sort of not so fondness for the Mormon Church and their involvement in California's gay marriage issue.
I don't even know where this came. I don't know anyone Mormon, so I don't.
Well, but you see, the idea of Mormon is foreign, and the principle is religion, which is at the heart of it spiritual sensibility, which at the heart of that is love.
Okay.
So you're talking about, again, forgive me all you lovely Mormons out there who might be listening. you're talking about the bastardization of pure love by virtue of the misunderstanding of it, the misapplication of it, which is both it represented in the dream by this sort of Mormon thing, but also by the non-direct communication. He won't tell you immediately. And you're, forgive me for bringing in a little bit of our pre-show conversation, but these are like conflicting ideas about how to be direct. And your thought is working out, well, here's what will happen if I'm indirect, if I don't speak. Or if I manipulate over here, or what could I have done differently? That's what the first dream is representing, all the things that sort of went wrong in this love experience. And then the second dream pours you right into that there's a healing at hand.
Okay.
So it doesn't feel good today, but I assure you that the healing is what's up, not the destruction, not the breakdown, because I think that's what we do as human beings. We're here to grow, we're here to expand, we're here to love. And every seeming obstacle to that is really just an opportunity to open up to more.
Stop thinking of guys so much. they occupy your dreams.
I know, what the hell. No,
go get a lap dance from a hot petite stripper and see if you can.
I think I'm switching to girls anyway.
Yeah.
I've already told that. Like, I've already had
that's the easy way out, huh?
Yeah, it is for now. For now. Oh, I had a weird dream. Well, God, you had a dream too, though. What about recurring dreams?
Well, there are two kinds of recurring dreams, okay? So the one type would be what I would call the stress-related recurring dream, which would be the thing that you dream about your whole life. Like, I'm always dreaming of getting, you know, chased by sharks. That's one I've heard a lot of. Or I always get, you know, the tsunami. There's another one I've heard of. Or,
you know, someone. I forgot about that.
What we need to process stress, it's part of what happens during sleep. The brain is downloading all the data that it experienced during the day. That's one thing that's happening. And we're de-stressing. That's another thing that's happening. So sometimes when life feels like it's chasing us down, we're going to have a dream about being chased down. It kind of allows us to survive the experience and wake up ready to do it again, right?
Yeah.
So that's the kind of recurring dreams that are typical and common. Most people have the same type of recurring dream over and over again.
Because mine, I have one where, you know, the police are after me all the time, trying to imprison me, and I'm constantly on the run.
Right, okay.
You know, and this happens to me, like, a lot.
In life?
No, no.
Oh. Sorry.
That's a good one.
No, it's not.
A little dream humor. So the brain is a very economical organ, so it's going to use the symbol or the image that is effective for you. And for whatever reason, that police. Yeah. Now, I can hear
Because I really dread, like, jail and stuff like that. You know?
Really?
Yeah. Like, I know I'm unusual that way. But
just curious, you speak with an accent. Yeah. So you're not from America originally, correct?
Yeah, originally from Israel.
Okay.
Yeah. So what does that have
well,
to do?
I was making a leap that maybe you were from a place where a police state was more.
Yeah, no,
but that's not the
quite.
Case either. All right. At any rate, it's just a good economical way for you to process stress is to imagine yourself being chased by the police under threat of jail. And then whether or not you recognize it as so, the fact that you wake up from that dream means that you have survived it.
Oh, okay.
And then you can take on more stress. Now, the other kind of recurring dream...
Well, that's the thing, though, is they usually don't catch me. You know, it's like I'm constantly on the run. They don't catch me. And if they do, I'm constantly like, okay, how do I get out of it?
And I think that's actually the point.
So do you think I'm like feeling like...
You escape, you mean? You need to get out of here?
Yeah, or something. Like,
or that the danger is imminent. I mean, life is a scary thing. I mean, my God, it's difficult.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It sometimes can feel... Again, we're talking about the unconscious. We're not talking about rationality here. We're not talking about us as humans and adults going, yeah, I know life is stressful, but I know I'm going to survive.
Right.
In the recesses of the unconscious mind, that's not what it feels like at all. It feels terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is just our way of expressing that terror in a way that is somehow comforting and restful for the psyche. It's a bit of a mystery, but it seems to happen that way.
Yeah.
Now, what if... Okay, because I've had this happen before where... And that's what always confuses me. I've had dreams that I've predicted things before.
Yeah. You've indicated that.
It happens so many times. So let's say... And I've saved people from weird things. So let's say... How do you know... Like, that's what I get scared of. Like, this dream, like something horrible is in the dream. How do I know if it's really going to happen or not?
I have two things to say to you about that. And one is... I don't know, call this bad news. Okay. The bad news is that if you have precognitive dreaming, that's what this is called, then you have precognitive dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
I often get this question from people who don't have that experience, but then they have a horrible dream about something happening to someone, and they'll call me and say, oh my God, does this mean it's going to happen? And I say, well, do you dream of things that occur on a regular basis? And they'll say no. And I say, well, relax. Just a bad dream. However, if you are predisposed to precognitive dreaming, it means that your intuition, your psyche, and your psychic ability works through dreams, which means that you're more likely to have a dream that will come true than someone else.
Right.
However, what I would encourage you to do, if this doesn't resonate with you immediately, then you can begin to look at the dreams. Precognitive dreams feel different.
Okay.
They're usually clearer, simpler.
Mm-hmm.
They're usually just one image or one scenario, whereas, for lack of a better word, regular dreams tend to be very chaotic, where anything can happen and probably will, and lots of dynamic different possibilities and characters and twists and turns. That's not going to be a precognitive dream.
Okay.
It's got to be very simple.
Okay.
And you even indicated you've saved people from things. Like, I had a client once who was a precognitive dreamer, and she said, I just bought a blue car, and I had a dream that I was driving over Sepulveda in the rain, and I had a terrible car crash, and it felt like a precognitive dream. Mm. I said, great. Winter's coming.
Right.
When it's raining, don't take Sepulveda. There you go.
That's true.
Well, whether it's, you know, whether I'm being silly or not, or whether, you know, she's just hooey and crazy, that's unimportant. First of all, it's going to comfort her to have something to do about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is if it is an accurate prediction and it does take place on Sepulveda and it's in the rain, it's something to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
So I would, when you have a dream that concerns you, that's what you want to look at.
Okay.
Was it a one scene, simple scenario, event-like experience that you are witnessing? Then it's more likely to be precognitive.
Right.
What about, do you believe in dreaming about past lives?
You know, I'm a closet mystic.
Okay.
I usually refer to myself as half scientist, half mystic, and that's really how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
I feel very connected to the mysteries of life and the idea of past lives. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also a scientist, which means that I want to understand something that can be proven. So in regard to past lives feel to me like a very good mythology to describe something that's indescribable.
Okay.
And the what it's describing is the ways in which we're all connected.
Mm-hmm.
We're all connected in this life, and we're all connected back in time. Now, scientifically, I know that there's you know, genetics, and
right.
there's umbilical cords, and there's a connection that, indeed, if you even just use your imagination to go backwards in time and imagine how we're all connected through biology,
mm-hmm.
there's a certain point where we all come from the same lineage, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So where better than in dreams to connect to existences of the human consciousness that came before us?
Mm-hmm.
So the answer to your question, the very long-winded answer was, yeah, yes,
okay.
I believe that.
Okay.
But I like to feel it through a sense of the science behind it.
No, I see what you're saying. My dad's kind of like that. He's like, it's science.
Well, I like science. Yeah. I was raised by a scientist,
right.
you know,
okay.
and my experience of science does not dismiss any of the mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I know that the mystics are always way ahead of the scientists, and I'm just waiting for the day, which is probably many generations beyond me, when we start to emerge. But look at quantum physics. Quantum physics is starting to describe all kinds of things about consciousness that validate what the mystics believe.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even things in the Bible, you know, when you talk to the mystics and stuff, they'll show you like explanations for the Big Bang and all that stuff, which sounds pretty scientific. So now, you said your parents were scientists?
Well, my mom was a researcher. She's now a psychotherapist, is actually looking to retire. And the only reason why she went into full-time practice was because she was on a research grant, and when that grant finished out, she was suddenly, I think she was probably, you know, in her late 50s,
right.
and suddenly she's going up against grad students for jobs, and so she had to leave research. But her love was research, and she was an empiricist. She did not believe in God. She did not believe in anything on the intuitive side of things. Now, I'm this little, like, bursting intuitive kid. I mean, I was in the wrong family in some ways to be mothered by her, except that now, today, as an adult, I can appreciate that what that gave me was, it was kind of like the exact kind of polishing that I needed, that I would not want to be one of those people who's so hooey-hooey with the belief in past lives and mysticism that no one can come near me because they think I'm, you know,
crazy
or I'm just eating too much granola or something. I'm not attracted to people who, like, I walked into a radio interview a year or so ago, two ago, and the producer said to me, oh, you're a starseed. You're from the Pleiades. So am I. And I'm thinking, honey, I'm not interested in this conversation. First of all, I don't even know you, and I'm about to go on the air, and like, what is that?
Blah, blah.
Now, meanwhile, what I didn't tell her was the very first time I saw a picture of the Pleiades, the stars, the little gathering of stars called the Pleiades, I welled up with tears.
Oh,
now,
wow.
Does that mean I'm from there?
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
What it really means is I thought they were pretty.
Yeah.
It's funny because they say I'm a starseed too, so what power?
Right. So what does that mean other than when we connect on that level, we both sort of have some idea that we have something in common.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be something in common that can't exactly be put into words.
Right.
And so starseed becomes then, for me, a mythology to describe something that's kind of indescribable. That's what all of these things are, mythologies to describe the mysteries of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if religion out there appreciated that it's all just mythology, you know,
they wouldn't be so fighting.
We wouldn't be killing each other for that, you know. You know, it's like the Christians don't believe that the earth is, you know, carried on the back of a great turtle, but they do believe that, you know, a virgin gave birth.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
I don't think it happened that way.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I don't like so either.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, you seem very comfortable with your sexuality and everything.
Yes, absolutely.
At what age did you realize?
Ah, great question. Let's see. Well, I certainly was aware around 7 that there was something different about my socializing. It certainly wasn't about sex or sexuality at that age.
Uh-huh.
But like I remember being on the playground where the boys would take the hats off the girls, and that was a big game.
Yeah,
which
I see, that's so mad.
Baffled me. I was like, what? So I would I would run around going, here, here, and I'd get the boys to throw me the caps, and I would give them back to the girls. So to me, that I wasn't identifying as a girl, but I wasn't identifying really as a boy. I was identifying with both sides of the spectrum. So I was just as game for running, reaching my hands out and saying, throw me the cap.
Right. Right.
But then my heart's desire was to give it back to the owner. And that was the first time I noticed, oh, I'm not like them.
Yeah.
I don't have the same impulses as those boys. And then when I, you know, when puberty hit and sexual fantasies began to permeate my daily activities, which you can read into what I'm talking about there, I began to recognize that the people I was thinking about that aroused me were my friends, my guy friends.
Wow.
And I was like, well, that must mean something.
Yeah.
And then I was reading the health pamphlet, you know, in health class. It says many boys go through a homosexual phase. And I thought, this ain't a phase. I just knew.
Yeah.
And that was 14.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was 14.
Yeah. And so you carried it with you for a while?
Not long.
Not long.
No. In fact, I had an interesting experience with that, is that I came out to my mother at a very young age, at about 15 probably, and really thinking it was going to go well, and it didn't.
It didn't go well.
No, and this was a source of great. She got very mad at me for what she called making a decision too soon. Like, you know, because I think at that point there was a lot of thoughts about it. It was a choice, and she also was a Freudian. You know, I'm a Jungian, she's a Freudian, so that characterizes our relationship. So she really believed back then that there was something that she did that made it happen.
Yeah.
You know, and there was beliefs, there's theories that were out there that, you know, a passive father and an overconnected mother will, you know, generate a homosexual kid.
Or that you were, something happened to you, like molested or something?
No. She just really believed that because she was so emotionally attached to me and that my father was very distant, that she had some culpability there. And I think that she projected that out on me as, don't be gay. Because if you are, it's my fault.
Right,
You know, and then what I did was I came out to my girlfriend because we were starting to be sexually active, and it was very uncomfortable for me because here's Mike's – we could breathe all this. We could talk about all this. All right.
Whatever.
When we would start making out, I would be very aroused because I was 15, 16-year-old kid, right? And then there'd be that, oh, okay, we're going to go and do the thing, and I got to put on the condom. And that act was filled with performance anxiety for me. That stopped my ability to perform. So I told her that I was gay, and I talked about this, and we as a couple decided to go on the pill. And we went into a clinic in Jersey, and we got her on the pill, and I'll never forget the day that, just because you have to wait 30 days before you're actually protected from pregnancy. I remember the day very well. And we were like, let's go home, and it worked like gangbusters.
Really? And without the condom.
With no condom, with no break in the sort of rhythm of arousal.
Right.
My 16 and 17 and 18-year-old hormones allowed me to be aroused, and also I loved this girl. I mean, she was my love at that time. But I also knew that that wasn't, when I went to college, I remember I met this very hot guy and this really fabulous woman. And I sort of said, okay, this is the moment of choice. And I was like, yeah, I got to go with the guy because that's what feels right in all my instincts. And that if I went with a woman, I knew that at some point it would be a betrayal. If I went with her. I had the impulses. They were small, though. And so they just didn't want to be honored.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So you're confident in yourself. I mean, that's what I like. You know, you come across as confident. You know what's going on.
I certainly know who I am, and I like who I am.
Did you have to go through a lot of tribulations and stuff?
Oh, my God, absolutely. And you wouldn't have necessarily known it from the outside that was – because the confidence is something that's just always been there, but it was used very, very craftily by me to hide my insecurities. So my experience in growing up in that way was really not so much of what it looked like from the outside, but what it felt like from the inside.
Right.
And that certainly took.
What sign are you?
I'm a Leo.
Okay.
You know, and today, everything that I do outside of my work with either writing or blogging or people and clients and whatnot is devoted in the gay community.
You know? Oh, I see.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm absolutely a leader in the gay community. I'm okay. part of the music ministry at a wonderful spiritual center called Project Service LA that we meet on Sundays in a bar in West Hollywood and do spiritual
awesome.
Church, you know.
Cool. Uh-huh.
You know, and I conduct a youth choir for gay kids over the Gay and Lesbian Center, and I'm part of a gay healer circle, blah, blah, blah. I just like to be of service to the
yeah.
the community, especially
yeah.
now that there's
think,
this
yeah.
movement afoot.
Yeah.
How young are these kids? Did they already come out and recognize themselves as
oh,
gay?
Oh, they're I had a in my first round of the choir, I had a 12-year-old trans girl.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Prepubescent.
Hmm. Yeah. Wow.
Biological male who was affirming female. Wonderful parents.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, so these are 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kids, mm-hmm. some
okay.
of whom are disenfranchised.
So they're not that, I mean, they're not kids anymore.
Well, they're not children.
Yeah,
in
not
fact,
18,
that 19, girl dropped
yeah.
out of the
right.
choir because I let her in because I was like, oh, my God, what
right.
you know, I want to be part of this if I can be helpful.
Right.
And she dropped out because she was so young that she just felt,
yeah.
you know,
like,
right.
yeah, this
she
is not
belong,
the right place
yeah.
for me. She didn't feel comfortable.
Yeah.
But, no, so the kids that I, when I say youth, it's, you know, the 20-something-year-olds. Yeah. But in a healthy society, the elders mentor the adults, and the adults mentor the youth.
Right.
And one of the challenges in the gay community today is that there are no adults. First 50-60% of them were wiped out by HIV in the 80s.
Wow.
And then a whole percentage of the survivors are in this sort of Peter Pan forever
yeah.
boy kind of posture and out there
yeah.
ignoring their duty to turn around and mentor the youth.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want young gay kids coming up thinking that the way for them to have successful and happy lives is to get to the gym so they have a hot body so that they can attract more sex partners and
right.
have more fun out in the clubs.
Yeah.
yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with any of those things.
Right.
It's that if that's how you self-identify, you're missing and
mm-hmm.
something. And you're also attaching yourself to something that's going to be temporal and is going to pass.
Right.
Yeah. Cool. So how can people get a hold of you if they want their dreams interpreted? And do you do other things as well?
Well, I'm a psychologist. I'm an astrologer. I'm a
right.
dream interpreter. So I see clients in a variety of fashions. So I see people and give them astrological guidance, which is not fortune telling for me. It's really just more about the energetic cycles that
mm-hmm.
people are in. And I sort of help people identify what's around the corner, not event-wise, but
right.
energetically. I don't have a license to practice psychotherapy because I wasn't ever interested in sitting in a room going,
okay.
I'm much too,
yeah.
I want to be in the room
right.
and part of the process. And coaching is lends itself to really being actively in the room and working with somebody about, you know, what their choices are
right.
going to be. And then I have a handful of clients who it's just dreams, and I sort of help them know who they are more deeply through dreams. And all of this I do both locally and all over the world on Skype and across the country.
Sounds
on the
good.
Phone.
So how can
yeah, my website is michaellennox.com, michaellennox.com. You can get to my blog from there, but the blog is dreaminginterpretation.com.
Uh-huh.
And that's the best place to reach me. And that's my email addresses are on there. And, you know, and you can also check out what I'm writing about dreams and astrology on a regular basis. And my first book came out this past year, which is a dream
Yay.
Dictionary called Dream Sight.
Congratulations.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
What's
yeah.
it called again?
Dream Sight.
Okay.
A dictionary and tools for interpreting any dream.
And where can people get that?
Amazon, Barnes &
okay.
Noble, online, in stores, all
awesome.
Over. In fact, somebody was at a Barnes & Noble store the other day and said, I saw your book. I was like, okay.
Cool.
I'm
going to
get it.
Cool.
I'm going to get it.
Dream Sight, S-I-G-H-T.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Dr. Michael Lennox, thank
yes.
you so much for joining
it's
us.
It's been an
thank
absolute
so
delight.
Yeah, yeah, you're a lot of fun and,
yeah,
and a lot of wisdom, I think.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I won't ask you how old you are, but you obviously have been...
I'm 48.
You look amazing.
Thank you.
You're
really
48,
do.
Really?
I'm 48.
Wow.
And single.
Really?
And to all those out
okay,
there,
people, yeah.
he's really hot. Really hot. I'm serious.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us.
Yes,
all the best
you.
To you.
Thank you.
Brigetta, enjoy yourself today. I know
I
you're
will.
Not crazy about Valentine's Day, but...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody else, enjoy your hearts
yes.
and everything, and we'll
oh,
see you all.
And tomorrow we have
yeah.
Debbie Allen.
Yeah, Debbie Allen, the dancer, choreographer.
There.
She's going to be awesome. So join us tomorrow, and we'll see you then.
Bye.
You have been listening to Sam in the Morning with Brigetta, which airs every Monday through Friday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Sam in the Morning with Bridgetta is an LA Talk Radio production, where we say what we want.